Hello and welcome to the Conscious Consulting Podcast, where we will introduce you to the Conscious Consulting philosophy. Together with our senior advisors from all around the world, we blend the deep knowing of wisdom traditions, technology, modern science, and business, and show you how to transform this wisdom into impact in your daily life as a consultant, leader, or entrepreneur. Welcome to the CCG community. When leading an organization, we must continuously adapt to new conditions, navigate the unknown instantly, and remain a calm mind to lead the way. By developing holistic thinking, we can learn how to deal with complexity and do that even then smoothly in the rhythm of change. Our senior advisor, Claudius van Wyk, is a holistic science philosopher, consultant, and teacher for complex system management at Ashridge University. And in this episode of the Conscious Consulting Podcast, Claudius van Wyk teaches us how to adopt holistic thinking to navigate in this complex modern world. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode on the Conscious Consulting Podcast. I am so happy that you are on the podcast and I'm so happy to talk to you today. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
So, Claudius, you're a holistic science philosopher and a complex system management trainer. So, very briefly, what is the key principle of holism?
In order to give a practical example of that, I'm going to talk about the question of wellness, well-being, and health. This will give us an easy step into what holistic science is and holistic management is. So in holistic health, you're looking at the whole person. You're looking at everything the person experiences. So it is not just the person's liver that is healthy or the person's digestive system that is healthy. It is the person's body, mind, and soul that is healthy. So you're looking at a complete integrative system. So that characterizes the holistic principle. It's looking at complete integrative systems. Then you could ask the question, where does the system end? And in fact, it doesn't end. It has relationships within relationships. But the key word that I'm going to be looking at is the principle of a central attractor. What holds it together? What holds the system together? And so the holistic principle then, what defines holism, is looking at where the influence of the entity meets other influences. So, for example, there's you and I. There is that which holds you together. There's that which holds me together psychologically, socially, physically. But as you and I are having this conversation, already we've created a new system. We've created a dance between you and I. So the next word that I'm going to introduce is the word dynamical. It is alive in the moment to the relationships that are going on. So then looking at the holistic principle, it looks at all of the relationships that keep a coherent entity alive in the moment. Let's start there, and then let's see where we go from there.
What characterizes a holistic thinker?
So what characterizes a holistic thinker is the capacity to see whole dynamical systems, is to look at what everything that is involved. So, for example, in complexity theory, we look at operative agencies. We look at, for example, let's take an organization. We take a look at its people. We take a look at its structures. We take a look at its activities. We take a look at its stakeholders. We take a look at where it gets its supplies from, and what impact that has on the whole planet. We take a look at where its product goes to. what influence that has on the planet. So we're looking at that weave of relationships that constitutes an entity. And so a holistic thinker is somebody that's looking big picture, but is able to identify specific components, specific agencies, and particularly is also having an open awareness to the unexpected. Because in a relationship, take for example this interview that we're having at the moment, we don't know where it's going to go next. We don't know the next space that that is going to be opened. Yes, you have some questions in your mind. I have some answers in my mind, but it's in this dynamic interaction between you and I that an emergence will take place. That's the key word. And so the holistic thinker is open to being sensitively aware of what is emerging and to determine whether that emergence is something that is beneficial, something that is good for this relationship, for this outcome of us being together. So that gives you the idea of what characterizes a holistic thinker. The openness to identifying all the agencies, all the parts that are participating, plus being open to emergence, to a creative moment.
Very interesting. Yeah. So it seems that presence is necessary for holistic thinking. How can we learn to become holistic thinkers? Has it something to do with presence?
Yeah, presence is absolutely a key word. And it's not new. Your mystical thinkers and your deep thinkers throughout the ages have asked, have invited us to presence. So let's think about what we typically do. The knowledge that we have, you and I, our information about the world is based on the past. It's based on our experience of history. It's based on our education. It's based on our culture. So our knowledge of the world is based on the past. And what we typically do then, we have framed that into a belief system, what we expect to happen, what we think is possible to happen. And we've based it on what we consider to be desirable and not desirable, what we want to happen, what we don't want to happen. And so when we look at the world, we are superimposing onto that world our past experience. And then we are projecting the future on that superimposition. Now, when we do that, we've already got perceptual filters in place. We've already got a way of viewing the world that is in place. And it will look for certain things and it'll avoid other things. That's our belief structure. So presence is an attempt to escape from the presuppositions of the past, to come into a moment that is dynamical. And so the question you're asking is, how do we learn to do that? And one of the key words is to open up our senses again. One of the key methods of becoming present is to see what's in front of our eyes, is to hear what's happening around us right now, is to become finally aware of our own physical responses. What am I feeling right now? What subtleties am I becoming aware of? And in that coming home to our senses, we come into the present. So somebody said, a teacher, and I know her name, it's Jeannie Laborde. She's an NLP teacher. She said, lose your mind and come to your senses. Now, she doesn't mean go mad. She actually means just for a moment, step out of the frameworks that you typically think in and just experience the magic of this now moment. And so presence is absolutely key to being able to engage in the holistic perspective, in the dynamical emergent now. And it enables a whole range of other experiences which you might be interested in, but I'll check if you are.
Absolutely. And it seems Yeah, that you have to forget everything you know, stay open and present. And I think this forgetting everything we know and we're used to is one of the hardest things, because we're so conditioned to act, yes, and react and to do things. But yeah, I'm absolutely interested in the next steps.
So the next step, and this is so key to the holistic perspective, when we are present, then we can notice subtlety that is occurring right now. We are open to the unexpected. And it is in that openness to the unexpected that we develop a quality called agility. We develop the capacity to dance. So now you might have this experience. I don't know if you've done ballroom dancing. I did in my youth. When you first learn to dance with somebody, you know, the steps are difficult. You've got to learn the steps and you're treading on each other's toes. But eventually, when you come into a relationship with the other dancer, the relationship takes over the dance. So you're no longer doing the steps. You are dancing in the relationship. And then in that magical moment, you can introduce novelty. And the introduction of novelty is not a disruptor. It doesn't break the flow. It doesn't break the rhythm. It adds something new. And in a dance of trust, in a dance of relationship, the other person in the dance finds it exciting. Ah, what is happening now? So agility is the ability to adjust subtly to the present dynamical moment without breaking the rhythm. And so that's a key in where we need to go in a dynamic, living, complex world. It's also an attitude. It's an attitude of excitement and interest and curiosity in novelty, in what is emerging. So then you ask the question and you said, well, why is that important? Well, I mentioned the old question of relationship. A dance is a relationship. All relationship is a dance. The very relationship of humanity to planet Earth is a dance. And when we have that agility and sensitivity to what is happening to us within the context and what we are doing to the context, then you get a much deeper quality of engagement. Then commitment to the ongoing moment is enabled. Then commitment is deepened. Then a shared sense of purpose can come out of that. And so presence enables agility. Agility deepens relationship and therefore deepens engagement. So those three factors then are what the holistic perspective invites. The holistic perspective invites presence, agility, engagement. And when that is really happening at a deep level, then we are able to escape the ego boundaries. We are able to escape judgment. How am I doing? How is this other person doing? The measurement, the quantification, and we are able to go into a far greater experience. Now, why is that important? That's important because in a dynamical world, in a world where things are moving and changing, often we have to deal with disruptive events. Our most disruptive event in recent times, of course, has been the pandemic. And everybody all around the world has had to adapt to that. There's no escape. We've had to adapt to that. It's been disruptive. It's challenged us. It's broken patterns. It's made us do new things. And so what it has demanded is for us to discover a new quality of resilience. So resilience becomes a key factor that will enable us to remain in the saddle of the horse whilst it's going over uneven ground. Remain on the bicycle while we're traveling over a slippery gravel path is resilience. Now, there's a difference between robustness, which is being tough and you can take the knocks, and resilience, which means that you are able to recover. The core difference with a holistic perspective is that presence enabling agility means that we are able to make the adjustments more readily in time. We're able to make timely adjustments. When we have that quality of engagement, then we can help others to do that as well. The whole system can do the necessary adjustment in time. And then we can take the knocks together and we can recover more quickly and we can actually become stronger by doing it together. We've learned how to do it together. And so the beautiful final product of presence is creativity or innovation. Together we learn new ways. We learn new things. We develop new approaches, new methods. Adaptability then leads to creativity. So the whole holistic perspective, holistic science, holistic leadership is in fact a framework or way of thinking how to be creative in a dynamical world, how to be generative in a dynamical, uncertain, rapidly changing world, and enjoy the journey. That's the great pleasure and gift of presence, and it characterizes the holistic perspective absolutely.
Sounds wonderful, beautiful. It sounds like if everybody would be a holistic thinker, the world would be a different place. And yeah, it's interesting when everything starts with presence. I'm asking myself, how can we become present? And you're also an advisor. You worked as a consultant. You are now in an MBA, involved in an MBA program. So when people ask you, how can we start with presence? How can we become present? What would be your answer?
Yes. So, you know, I worked in a major construction industry as a consultant for a number of years. And it was a very exciting time. It was fusing two companies into a new company in the construction industry. And part of their whole message was related to occupational health, occupational safety. And they had signs up. And the sign said, stop, think, act. And so it is getting out of habit. It's getting out of habitual instinctive response. And just for a moment, stepping out to take another look and stopping. That's really difficult when you are under high pressure. But it's really important when you are under high pressure is stop and reflect and look. So taking time out is a key aspect of coming into presence, stopping what you're doing, even stopping what you're thinking. Now, from a philosophical perspective, even say, what is it that I'm thinking? Thinking about your thinking is a way of stopping. I've got these thoughts, let's not have those thoughts. I've got this perspective, maybe there's another perspective. It's an interruption of the habit. And that's really important because there's a model we've developed that relates to this. It's called the process and emergence tool. And so it's got four overlapping circles. And the critical circle that we're talking about is called unconscious functionality. That means that we are functioning from a habit which we don't even think about. It just works. unconscious functionality. And we're in the zone, we're on a cruise, you know, we're having an easy time. But unconscious functionality only operates within a particular context where that behavior is effective. If we have a change in the context, then quite easily, unconscious functionality, a good habit, can become unconscious dysfunctionality. It's no longer a good habit. It doesn't work anymore. It's become a bad habit. And so that's really easy to happen. Now, if we have presence, then we will pick up the early signals when that shift is taking place. Something's not working anymore. Why doesn't this feel right? The question, that still small voice, that whisper. When we have presence, then we're aware of that. That's the source of intuition. When we're not aware of that, typically what we try to do is to force the existing pattern to keep working in a situation where it doesn't work so well anymore. And so it's really called denial. Now, when we're into denial, then obviously we have to find a cause for why things are not working out there, and so we project it onto the context. It's because of the weather, it's because of the economy, it's because of the government, it's because of these silly people that don't want to do their work. Projection. Projection then has a trajectory in it which is very easy and very insidious. It wants to then find some cause to blame. It's because of this person or that person. So stay with me as we consider this. As unconscious functionality slips into unconscious dysfunctionality, that is because there's been a change in the working space, in the operational environment. If we don't detect those signals early enough and respond to them, agility, then we tend to want to project, blame, but inevitably, Lisa, we become a victim. We're a victim of circumstances. Now it's going to take quite a shock for us to recognize that it's actually our own behavior that no longer works. Our collective behavior, the organizational behavior, the team behavior, humanity's behavior. It takes a bit of a shock. And then we go into what is called conscious dysfunctionality, where we need to take ownership. I need to do something different myself. And the difficulty with that is the ego. I don't want to look silly. I don't want to look as though I made a mistake. And so we want to try and hide away. But by trying to hide away, we stay in unconscious dysfunctionality. So presence, that capacity to respond to early subtle signals, because there's the holistic perspective, because it's looking at all of those moving parts, that enables us to get to conscious dysfunctionality very quickly. Ah, there's something we have to do differently. And we can then move into getting the necessary support, and we can then start the next process, which is the key component, and that is experiment. That is to begin to probe, to try something new, and once again with the same sensitivity to respond to the results. Amplifying that which doesn't work, amplifying that which works, which is successful, dampening that which is not working, until we find a new way of becoming consciously functional. A new quality of expertise, a new quality of competence, and then that gets habituated all over again. So the holistic perspective understands how we learn as an ongoing process in an ever-changing world, because it's looking and sensing all of those components, responding to the whole system. And so it is the quality of consciousness that we need in this kind of world. And presence, as you identified it, is the key quality that is called on so we can act that way.
Oh, beautiful. So it's like an intersection. So being present and identifying this unconscious behavior or habits. And then if you detect this habit as a habit and not your own identity, then there's an intersection. And if you're aware, then you can take the path to agility. Is that correct?
That's beautiful. You're making a very, very important statement there. And that is that the habit is not the person. A person can become dominated by habits. And that wants to be corrected, because then you're no longer free. As long as you are trapped into habits, your freedom is gone. The capacity to make choices of how you and I respond to the world characterizes our human freedom. That's what defines us as human race, is that we can make choices. We can evaluate. We can say, I don't want this, I want that. I don't have to respond like that, I can respond like that. So we need very clearly to differentiate between the person as a potential, a creative potential, and a habit that might be trapping that potential. In a discipline that I studied very deeply called neuro-linguistic programming, they said behavior is geared for adaptation. Every act that we take is to make an adjustment, whether it is to go get a glass of water or to save the planet. It is to actually make an adaptation. All behavior, every behavior has some kind of positive intention. We're wanting to do something for ourselves. Even if we're drinking too much wine, there's something that we are wanting to get out of that. It has a positive intention. But the habit might not be bringing us the results we want. What is it that we're looking for is the question we would need to ask. What's the purpose? What's the greater outcome? And when we identify the greater outcome, why a person has been in the habit, then we can add more choices. And that's the holistic perspective that says, what's the greater outcome? So all behavior is intended to adapt to the environment. If it's not working, we want to ask, what's behind that behavior? What's the greater outcome? What's the unsatisfied need? Let's find more holistic choices. But it is the sensitivity of presence that you're talking about, where we respond to the feelings in our bodies. We respond to the still small voice in our minds. We respond to our partner's raised eyebrow or that little frown. It's that presence that enables us to detect something shifting. It invites me to be fluid and get into the flow. It's a very important point you're making about the identity is not the habit, but the habit can hijack the identity for a while.
Thank you so much. I feel like a good student right now. Thank you so much. There are two things, actually. One, I'm really interested in your thoughts about this. How do you distinct presence and consciousness?
How do you distinguish between presence and consciousness? So there is a view of consciousness that says consciousness is the information that pervades the entire cosmos. It is the dynamic tensions between all the elements in the cosmos so that they are able to respond to each other. Consciousness is the very comprehensive set of relationships that hold the entire cosmos together, out of which this earth emerged, out of which life forms emerged, out of which you and I emerged, so that we can have this conversation. That's one definition of consciousness, as a universal set of relationships between all of the interacting forces and energies that come together to create this manifest world. That's one view. The next view is my piece of that and your piece of that. To what extent we are engaging with that by our relationship with the world that is presented to us and that we are generating. So there's a generalized concept of consciousness, and then there is our unique own way of engaging with that. That's another quality of awareness. Presence at a deepest level expands the way that we engage into a greater and greater relationship with a bigger cosmos. So presence is a behavioral response to consciousness. Presence is a mechanism to expand our consciousness, to embrace the greater dynamic world. And the beautiful philosophical thing about that, you spoke about identity. As we get into that presence that enhances consciousness, our sense of identity transforms. So then Claudius doesn't just end here by the skin. Claudius includes relationships like this relationship with this place that I'm living in. The sense of self expands into a much greater quality of being. So your original question was, how does presence, what is the relationship of presence to consciousness? There is universal consciousness. That is the set of relationships that allows the universe to exist, to have evolved. Then there is my particular relationship with that manifest universe in my life. And presence is the quality of to what extent I'm there engaging with that, or to go back to the point that we made earlier on, I'm superimposing a history that has already passed onto this moment and projecting a history that is already passed onto the future. Presence is that dance in consciousness with a cosmic dance. That sounds philosophical, doesn't it?
A bit, yeah, but it sounds, mind-challenging and very fascinating. The other thing I wanted to highlight again or stress out is what you said about the sign that was held up in your company.
Stop.
The stop. What was think. It?
Stop, think, act.
Yeah, act.
Yeah.
And I think this is a really profound and important principle also of conscious consulting. The more pressure there is, the more important it is to stop and to not act immediately, not to react. And what does it mean now for leadership? Everything we have talked about now, how does holistic leadership would look like?
So your question is very important. If we look at the world that we live in, it's been the strangest experience where we live in isolation physically. I don't know when last you've been out. We live in isolation physically, and yet we are more interconnected than we've ever been before. So last night we had a webinar. And there were people from the United States, people from France, from Germany, people from Nigeria coming together and sharing a space together. So even though COVID has disrupted our physical presence, it has accelerated the bringing together of people in communication, the bringing together of agendas. And that, of course, has been manifest in the whole globalization of trade. Now, in the past, trade really related to goods that were being shipped across on ships and in aircraft and things like that. A lot of that now is trading in ideas. It's creating experience. It's watching Netflix. It's listening to podcasts like the one that you are generating. It's consulting online. And so what we've got is a world that is far more interrelated, interpenetrated. And into that, and in that interpenetration, we have got different nationalities, different language groups, different cultures, different values, different agendas, different ideologies. And all of those are extremely diverse. And that diversity is coming together in a new kind of weave. It's like the magnificent Persian carpets where they weave these patterns into the carpet. Now, on the one hand, we can see that as highly complex and highly difficult to deal with, and it is. But on the other hand, we can see it as very enriching, very potentially creative. So holistic leadership for any kind of organization recognizes that we are living in a complexifying world, in an interrelated world, where all sorts of dynamics are working in on our experience, whether it is technology, whether it is human culture, whether it is changes in nature. And we've got to take all of that into account so that our organizations can adapt, can adjust, and continue to deliver their value proposition to their stakeholders. So any organization is a group of people that comes together for a purpose. That purpose is to deliver some kind of value to its stakeholders. Now, typically for business, it's profit to the shareholders. But for another organization, like a hospital, it's the well-being of their patients. Whatever it might be, for the Conscious Consulting Group, is to help consultants to get a more holistic perspective of how consultants can actually engage more generatively with their clients. So any organization is a group of people that are coming together to deliver their value to their stakeholders. In the holistic perspective, that what is the value that we want to deliver at a holistic level, that it impacts the biggest dimension of stakeholders, then we can adapt and adjust and dance with the dynamic nature of life whilst we keep our eye firmly fixed on the value that we want to deliver to the stakeholders. So we're not stuck in the rigid structures. We're not stuck in silos. We're not stuck in protocols. All behavior is directed dynamically to delivering the value to the stakeholder, to where we want to deliver our value. And for Conscious Consulting, that ultimately is what we want to do. We want our clients to not only access the deeper value that they want to deliver to their stakeholders, but we want to help them to learn how to dance with a dynamical world so they can deliver that even more effectively. That's what Conscious Consulting is for me.
Thank you. Do you have examples of holistic leadership?
And so I'm going to give you three. I'm not going to give you technicalities, but I'm going to give you three models. One model is centralized leadership. So if we take in the United Kingdom, for example, they have the National Health Service. And the National Health Service is responsible to the government. The government appoints and pays the bills. You get centralized leadership, top down. Then you get decentralized leadership, which is where you have pockets of leadership. So you might have a multinational organization that has got that quality of leadership in South Africa and that quality of leadership in Germany and that quality in the United States, whatever it might be. They're actually giving autonomy to the operative sections in the where they operate. They're giving the ability to make certain choices to adapt to their environment where they're busy operating, decentralized leadership. When it comes to holistic leadership, there's something even more subtle that's emerging. It's called distributive leadership. So now you don't have some autonomous body saying, this is what you have to do. So the leadership is not command and control. What you now have is intelligent nodes that are being led by the value proposition. So we're turning this upside down. The leader isn't driving people to deliver value. The value that they want to deliver is driving people to find the best way to do that. And then that is a distributive kind of leadership. The flavor of the day is an organization in the Netherlands called Buurtzorg. And Buurtzorg is a group of people that are caregivers and nurses They come into a big organization. They self-organize. They do it far more efficiently. They do far more effective delivery of their value to their communities within their budgets and with people having far deeper satisfaction in the flexibility of work. But it's always done with agreement to, does this work to the best value of the patient that we're looking for? I'll give you another example. One of the hospitals in the United Kingdom was not meeting budget. It was not meeting its targets. So in the United Kingdom, for example, the National Health Service has targets. An ambulance has to be back to the hospital within 20 minutes of the call. A patient has to have been seen in emergency within 15 minutes of arrival, and so forth. So they got all of these targets, which is really based on old protocol thinking. You have to do this and you must do that, and you're going to be rewarded if you perform according to these standards. They were not meeting their targets. They were not operating within their budget, and the people were demoralized because they were being punished, basically, because they weren't successful in a subtle kind of way. And then they called in a complexity practitioner who said, what is your ultimate responsibility? What is your ultimate responsibility as a hospital? And they said, our ultimate responsibility as a hospital is to look after the patient. So he said, right, let's focus on that. So instead of focusing on the targets, which is being measured by your centralized authority or your decentralized authority, they focused on the patient journey from admission to just discharge. And they said, how do we, in every step of the way, do we optimize the resources so that this patient has the best possible experience from admission to discharge? And they found that so many of the targets that they were being required to follow actually didn't help their journey. But it was giving people, I ticked the box, the capacity to tick the box. By shifting that to saying, we want to optimize all our resources to enhance the patient experience all the way to discharge, very soon they had a staff that was remoralized, they were enthusiastic, they were exceeding their targets, and they were doing it within budget. Now, that requires a particular perspective. It requires a perspective of trust in the goodness of people, that people want to deliver value, that people can be creative, that they don't have to be managed like robots, and they can be encouraged and they can be corrected when they make mistakes. That's natural. But it is the focus on what is the outcome that we want to deliver, what is the value that we want to deliver to the greater context. And that then is what holistic leadership is about. It's a new way of looking at mobilizing and optimizing resources to create greater value in the world.
Wonderful. Thank you. It reminds me of purpose-driven companies, is it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Finding the purpose of the company and then having an holistic view on how to get there. Yes. Could you maybe summarize that?
Yeah. I was very fortunate back in the 90s. 6 months after Mandela was released from prison, I met him at a function. And it was a beautiful function. The organization was fast-tracking young black people who'd been previously kept out of technological opportunities. It was fast-tracking young black people into technological opportunity, identifying them at school, if they had a talent for maths, if they had a talent for science, if they could speak English. It said, let's support you right through the rest of school, through university, right into the workplace. And so this organization was doing that, led by a very, very beautiful Afrikaner woman who is no longer. And I was part of that movement. Our organization had donated funding to that. And at the annual general meeting, Nelson Mandela and Winnie Mandela were the guests of honor. And I met him. and we had a conversation around economics. And he stimulated something very powerful in my mind. He poked me and my colleague firmly in the chest and he said, "We don't know much about economics. You businessmen must tell us how to run the country," but he said, "in a way that works for all South Africans. What kind of economy will work for all South Africans?" Now, you know the history. In South Africa, the white people were advantaged. They had all the money. The black people really had to struggle. There were those that were very successful, notwithstanding, wealthy millionaires. They just found a way. And it burned into my mind, what does that economy look like? And so it was through that stimulation that I then established transformation strategies. And I still function with transformation strategies, strategies for transformation. Years later, I communicated with Mandela when he was president, in the last years of his presidency. And I proposed to him that there should be a council of elders. He should get people of wisdom together, almost like a conscious consulting group around him. So people, but people who didn't go for political status, people who didn't want financial reward, people that were simply there who would be prepared to speak truth to him. People that would be prepared to offer their opinions without fear. And he should invite a grouping of people like that. I called it a council of elders. And I got letters back from him saying he appreciated that. In 2006, he established the Council of Elders.
But why? Why did you suggest it? How? Why did this idea came to you?
Because already then the first signs of corruption were creeping in to the South African political system. Have you heard of Bishop Tutu? Bishop Tutu was the bishop of the Anglican Church in South Africa, a very, very close friend of Nelson Mandela, a very senior theologian and a man of, he's still alive, a man of enormous moral stature. And Bishop Tutu said, "The gravy train only stopped long enough for the previous passengers to get off and the new passengers to get on." The corruption just started very quickly. And so it was that capacity to see what is taking place. I said, you need to have people that will give you the truth, that are prepared to and to guide you and advise you in this complex world. And that was what motivated me. But I must tell you that when that was established in 2006, it was Richard Benson that claimed it was his idea. So you won't see my name attached to that, but I've got the letter from the president. Yeah.
That, yeah, unfortunately, that happens to a lot of brilliant people. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's about the impact, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you think that, I mean, of course, it would be better if you are the one who are present and detect those unconscious habits for yourself. But in this case, it was you from the outside as a consultant being present and realizing something is going on and then advising him to do something. Is this also a really important task for an advisor to be also that kind of present for someone else?
You're quite right. So I guess that what it's really important what you're saying there. The consultant wants to be an additional set of eyes and ears for the person that is looking for the support and the guidance. They say two minds are better than one. The more that we have a diversity of perspectives that are coming together, the more factors can be realized, the more the fuller dimension of reality can be processed through the different ways of thinking, through diversity. It's a very critical. And so the role of the consultant is less about telling people what to do, but more about helping people to see what they're not seeing, hear what they're not hearing, but more importantly, to hear their own inner voice, to create a space where leadership or people of influence can actually feel free to explore what is happening for them without feeling they've got to say the right thing, without being politically correct, where they can actually articulate what's moving for them. Now, what's moving for them might be something nasty, but it's much better if they recognize it than if they suppress it. And so the role of the consultant is to help that individual that is asking for support to come to a much deeper experience of their own insights, their own intuitions, to create that same space where they can explore without fear of judgment, without having to commit on the spot to a course of action, just to become aware. And if the consultant has just been able to do that and so unlock their own wisdom, their piece of consciousness that we spoke of that universal consciousness, to help unlock that, then the consultant's job has been well done. The consultant doesn't have to be an expert in finances or in structures or in chemistry. That the consultant is there to help the people to have a deeper experience of their own potential wisdom and creativity. And that is what I think conscious consulting is about.
Yes, it definitely is. And in our mind, we think so much about how should leadership look like? How does the new requirements for leadership look like? But actually, for us, it's also so important, how does the new requirements for consultants look like in a dynamical, complex world?
Yes.
Yeah, you described it very well now.
So, Lisa, I'm reviewing this whole notion of leadership. And as I think about it, we all have influence. You influenced me by the very questions that you asked me to consider. You influenced me by the very constraints that you put on. You said, let's try and make this digestible and understandable and practical. You influenced me. As we talk, no doubt, I'm influencing you. So we all have influence. And it is that influence that characterizes leadership. Now, in the past, leadership was authority, the capacity to command. But now we're looking at a far more refined form of leadership, the capacity to influence. And what the world needs now is for the global population to be influenced into another direction, into a direction of creating a sustainable world, a fairer world, a more just world, a world in which we reverence holistically everything that enables us to be, including the plants and the animals and the soil and the oceans and the skies and people. So leadership now shifts from the capacity to control, the capacity to direct, the capacity to buy, I pay you a salary, so you better do what I tell you to do, to the capacity to influence. And once again, as you raised, that influence is in the direction of the purpose that the organization is about. Now, that organization can be a family. It can be a community. It can be a faith-based community. It can be a society. It can be a state organization, a private for gain profit company, but it is what is the purpose, what is the value that you want to give, and the role of leadership is to influence people to better offer that value into the world. That's the holistic perspective.
Yeah, beautiful. So we're all leaders. Yes. We all have influence. And so as we all are leaders and as we all influence, we all have the obligation to become conscious.
Yes.
And consciously lead and influence people all around us.
Yes. So,
yeah, beautiful.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So, and as we are moving forward in this very complex times we're living in right now, So dealing with complexity is a topic that becomes relevant for all of us as we are all leaders now. What do you think? What is the difference between complex and complicated?
Okay. It's a really important distinction that you're asking about there. Here I've got an old phone. That's an iPhone 6. This is advanced to iPhone 11 now, I believe. An expert knows everything about this. This is a complicated instrument. If it breaks, an expert will be able to do the analysis, take it to pieces, and fix it. Only trouble is that the system doesn't want me to fix it. The system wants me to throw it away and buy another one. But an expert would know how that works. The very signals that it picks up from the internet, from the clouds, an expert would know exactly how that works and be able to intervene. So complicated is where there are many, many components that are interacting, but all the components can be identified and the parts that are not working can be replaced or repaired. So complicated takes expertise, it takes analysis, it takes best practice, it takes experience, it takes knowing what to do and getting on with the job. Complicated. Complex is like that plant outside there. That plant outside is a living system. It's got roots that are drawing nutrients from the soil in some kind of a way that is amazing. It is engaging in photosynthesis, which is it's taking energy from the sun, and it is converting that into carbohydrates so that that cookie that you had with breakfast time is actually frozen sunlight. It's energy that has come from the sun and been converted. That's a complicated dynamical because so much is involved and it's constantly in a state of adjustment. It's constantly in a state of adaptation. And all of these parts that are interacting, all of these components that are interacting, do so in a way that gives novel results. Do so in a way that give us results that we couldn't have expected. Like the coronavirus, it gave us results that we didn't expect because we can't identify all the parts and it's morphing and changing as we go along. We're now looking at a third wave in Europe. That's complex. So complexity can't be addressed by expertise, but it can be addressed by awareness, agility, engagement, the qualities that we discussed. Expertise has its appropriate place. So if I go to have surgery, I want to know that the expertise is in place. But as we deal with this emerging world with so many interpenetrating factors, climate change, technology, we need a new perspective which can deal with that complexity because complexity has a vast unknown. It has what is called emergent properties. Things are going to happen that could not have been predicted. And it calls on us to be able to not be thrown off the saddle by the unexpected, but to learn how to adapt with that very quickly. That's the big shift from complicated to complex. And complexity science is teaching us how to map those what are called variables, how to observe them, how to observe trends, how to observe emergence, how to identify what is becoming a stronger thing, what is fading, what's changing. So it was the cybernetician Gregory Bateson who said, notice the difference that makes the difference. It's becoming subtly aware of differences, which is why becoming subtly aware of differences in our own feelings, in our own thoughts, is the beginning of that presence. So whereas complicated requires expertise, and expertise is based on all the experience that we built up through the past, complexity requires presence, sensitive awareness and capacity to adapt, explore, experiment, test, let go, engage, dynamical nowness. That's the difference between complexity and complicatedness.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And I'm very excited for trainings and workshops that are coming from you. Yeah, for diving deeper into those topics. So
love it. And I'm looking forward to it.
So, and Claudius, there's the last question I ask everyone who is talking to me on the Conscious Consulting podcast. And it is, what is, like, from your perspective, what is the secret to a good life?
If I were to give you a very quick answer to that, it would be to know what joy, how joy comes about. It is to understand the source of joy or happiness. And there are four components that are really critical there. And the first component is appreciation. The first component to a joyful experience is to look for the good and see the good. Because if we look for it, we'll find it. Okay? Let me give you an example. Now you got me going here. When Viktor Frankl was in Auschwitz, as a German Jewish psychiatrist, he would go out, he was in the concentration camp, and he would look at the sunrise. And he would say, look, the day has come again. Sanity prevails. This is crazy. This must pass. He would look at the first shoots of grass coming up through the bricks. He would say, look, life is living. That's good. That's sanity. This is crazy. This must pass. And so it was his capacity to focus on the good that gave him the reassurance that life is good, firstly. The next thing is, from that sense of appreciation comes positive expectations. Now that I can see the good, I can anticipate the good tomorrow and the day after. I can cultivate positive expectations. And so he said to his fellow inmates, he said, dream of your future. He said, dream of your families. Dream of being reunited with your families. Cultivate positive expectations, a vision of possibility. And so when we have appreciation, then we can project that sense of appreciation into the future positive expectations. Now, when we have those positive expectations, the next thing we need to do is we need to cultivate our own sense of competence, our own sense of self-confidence. So visit and reflect on your own capacities. Reflect on what you've achieved. Reflect on the lessons you've learned, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And remember that all of that has given you a base of experience so that you can deal with making those positive expectations work. So it flows logically from appreciation to positive expectation to I can do that. I have the capacity. I'm a creative person. I can respond. I'm adaptable because I'm present. And I can do that. And then finally, he said, it's relationship. Who am I doing this with? Because we are social creatures. And so it is the sense of deep gratitude, holding a vision for the future, holding a vision of our own personal becoming in that future, and knowing that we're not alone. We're not even alone with our fellow human beings. All of nature is conspiring with us to realize new potentials. We are an agency of evolution on this planet. All of nature, we're not alone. There's a much deeper intelligence that informs the universe than our little minds. So, joy is about deep appreciation, positive expectations, positive expectations about own becoming, self-confidence, and we're not alone. We're in this together. And that's what Conscious Consulting can offer as well.
Very powerful. Thank you so much, Claudius. And thank you so much for our conversation. It was really mind-opening. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to this episode of the Conscious Consulting Podcast. If you want to dive deeper into the field of conscious consulting, become a part of our community, visit ccg-group.eu and subscribe to our newsletter so we can stay connected. You will find the link in the show notes. We look forward to having you on board.